Live, uncensored, Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
All right, let me adjust my microphone. All right, bear with me. Bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm trying to do that right now. Okay, here I am. I took a little nap before I came on, and here I am all disoriented. My goodness, that's what happens when you sleep in the energy cleaner tub for 4 or 5 hours. I'm like, all right, well, I'm back again. And here we are tonight, ladies and gentlemen, going to say hello to a man who, well, he's really an American political icon to me. He's a writer, author, biographer. You know, he's probably the last surviving protege of the 20th century intellectual, and that is Mr. Ezra Pound. And with me today is none other than Eustace Mullins. Hello there, Eustace.
Oh, hello there.
Did you hear that introduction?
It was a very good introduction.
Well, thank you. I'm happy that you're back. It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, it's not that much.
Well, you moved.
To me now as a political refugee.
Political refugee is
right. Yeah.
Yes.
I was on the run. I made 2 trips to Ohio and tried to settle up there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the run for the last few years.
That's true. No, I remember we were talking to you from different states, and you are now down in the Lone Star State, right?
Lone Star.
And there you are, a Lone Star, shining in the night, and you are one of the last bastions of intellectual prowess and integrity from, as we say, the previous century. And you, of course, have quite a story to tell. So for people who haven't heard about you, tonight I'm going to have you get up first and tell us a little bit about your extensive background and how you became a political prisoner, like Ezra Pound, here in this free country, as George Bush would say. So why don't you tell us right now a little bit about Ezra Pound, first of all.
Well, Ezra Pound tried to stop the war in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that'll get him into trouble.
With munition makers and warmongers.
Yes.
And that's why they put him in a lunatic asylum.
Uh-huh.
And he was never convicted of anything or sentenced to anything, but he spent 15 years mm-hmm. in a hellhole that you wouldn't want to put a dog into.
Mm-hmm. No trial and no charges, really, in a democratic fashion now, or conviction. What would we expect from the Roosevelt administration? Anything
more?
Well,
that's Mr. Roosevelt.
Yeah.
He fought his enemies from 1932 on. Mm-hmm. Anyone who opposed him became a public enemy.
Yeah.
And he locked up hundreds of people between 1932 and mm-hmm. 1936.
Yes. And then during the war years, too.
Oh, yes.
With the sedition trials, right? The so-called
trials. Oh, the alien and sedition trials.
Mm-hmm.
I knew every one of the people in those trials. Mm-hmm. They're all good friends of mine.
Yep.
And they were hounded like Stalin would hound an anti-communist.
Well, that's exactly what Roosevelt was. He was the American Stalin, wasn't he?
He was. Good old Joe, they called him.
Yep, and good old Franklin. I see Joe Persico now has a new book out on Mr. Franklin's great mistresses. So that's interesting reading as well. All right, you stay where you are there, Eustace. We have just a quick break now, and you stay where you are on the phone, and we'll be back in 3 minutes from now to round up the herd, as they say, and we will entertain calls for our old-time listeners and new-time listeners to Eustace Mullins tonight. Remember, the number is 800-313-9443. That's the number to get you on the air with Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins. Radio Avenger will be right back, right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network in just 3 minutes.
By some awful quirk of fate, the Morlocks had become the masters, and the Eloi their servants. The Morlocks maintained them and bred them like cattle.
Well, thank you, fellow cattle out there, fellow Eloi. It's Eustace Mullins' time, and Eustace is a G. How old are you now, Eustace? 85?
85. I can't believe it myself.
My good, I can't either to look at you. You look just marvelous out there.
Well, that's because I'm still in the middle of my work. I'm not retired.
That's right. By the way, we mentioned that last night in plugging your appearance tonight, that you're working on, with the help of some good people down there, some video productions, aren't you?
Oh, yes, we're doing a lot. Oh, we had a wonderful meeting on the Federal Reserve here last Friday, and we had a very good crowd, and we're going to build up something big here because this is the center of the heart of Texas, which is the only republic in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I know what you're saying. You're right on the money. And
oh, yeah.
Speaking of the Federal Reserve System, of course, thanks to you and people like yourself who have done such marvelous investigations on this Marxian, banking system right out of the manifesto in the international banking industry, the Federal Reserve System today has been under fire, and people have been asking some tough questions that they're not supposed to ask, and hence they've been ushered off the center stage in the mainstream, so-called mainstream media, because the subject is not to be broached. And now we're beginning to see exactly what Mr. Lindbergh said when he opposed the establishment of this Federal Reserve System way back when, in 1912. And he said that we would see what we're seeing today, didn't he?
He certainly would. And you know what happened to Mr. Lindbergh? He
mm-hmm.
was a fine lawyer and a congressman from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Federal Reserve Act passed, they ran every congressman out of Washington who had voted against it, and they never could come back.
Isn't that amazing, the power they had?
Well,
even
it is, because
then.
Nobody thought they had that power. And Lindbergh was a very powerful man himself.
That's true.
And they threw him out like a cast-off stray dog.
They certainly did. They didn't want anybody to continue to operate in opposition to the Fed, because just a few years later, they would have us in war, in World War I, making a bundle of money, inflating the so-called Federal Reserve currency, and then causing a depression, out of which they would rescue us again with another war.
A credit crisis, and millions of people are going to lose their homes.
Yep.
And they can't even buy an automobile.
Nope.
They can't even buy gas for the automobile.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful of them, though, huh?
Well, it was a gift to the country.
Yes. Well, you know what? I see that, of course, when you had written some great books, and I guess it was the 1950s, you had written the Secrets of the Federal Reserve, right?
Oh, yes.
I remember that book years ago. The Spotlight had helped distribute that book, Liberty Lobby Press.
Oh, yeah.
And that in itself, you are to be commended for that monumental work because of the research involved in what you're saying now, the danger and the harm that this central bank would create in the United States. And it has been the most disastrous, I think, institution that we have seen, wreaking the havoc that it's had on the economy. And yet the banks were able to, as you say, the powerful elite, Rothschild, Warburg families, were able to change the political landscape and get what they wanted.
Because they printed their own money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big advantage.
Well, that certainly helps, doesn't it, huh?
Well, you don't have to go to the bank and borrow the money and pay interest on it.
Good, good.
You pay interest on the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Notes, whatever. Notes, they call them notes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a note at all, because a note is a promissory note to pay.
Right.
And you pay all your life to the Federal Reserve System. There is no vacation from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people have found that out the hard way. Well, I really owe it all to Ezra Pound, because they locked him up in the insane asylum because he opposed our going into World War One or World War Two. Well, both, actually.
Yep.
And it didn't make any difference at all.
Well, you know, I see that after Colonel Edward Mandel House, who I guess in 21, Woodrow Wilson's right-hand man there, established the CFR, then the Rockefellers also became involved in helping to get it well-financed by 1927.
Oh, they joined the crowd. They all jumped into it.
Mm-hmm. So they were basically doing whatever it needed to take to establish this group, this elite club, if you will, that would forever influence and control the branches of the federal government, particularly the Congress. And now we see that with all of these candidates, you know, like Hillary and of course, John Sidney McCain and Obama, all of them managing to either be fellow travelers or members of this elite club. And although they very seldom want to discuss it at all, isn't that interesting?
Oh, yes. They won't talk about the Bilderbergers or anything. But, you know, there's not very much elite about them because these are homosexuals and dope addicts. And I don't consider that an elite.
Well, you got George Bush is among.
Well, he's just a pedophile.
Well, there you go. You just named them.
Him.
Right, exactly. What are your thoughts on this so-called election? Is it any different from the phony elections that you witnessed in the 40s and 50s?
Phoniest of all.
The phoniest of all, huh?
They were phony. They have established new standard of phoniness, which they're living up to.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of this country are very tired of it. They've had 3 years of talking about nothing. Meanwhile, we end up with a mortgage crisis and are losing homes.
Mm-hmm.
The price of gas is going through the roof. So whatever they're doing, they're not doing it very well.
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you said they spent all this time talking about nonsense. And even before the primary today, you know, the nonsense they were talking about was, you know, this business of style over substance and whether Hillary is a victim of sexism or whether she is the sexist or not. I mean, it's just so stupid and so mindless. And it's typical of the media and most of the talk radio landscape today, outside of us, of course. And it's just, if I may use the term, based on the new book, an abomination, you know, the book about Obama. Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen, in the year 2008, going into 2009, and as Eustace said, gas prices, at least in terms of Federal Reserve notes, are out of control, and they're spiraling out of control. Home heating oil will be out of control, and soon we'll see that happen to food. And I just don't think it's all by accident, Eustace.
Well, Roosevelt boasted 1932, we planned it that way.
Yes, if anything happens in politics. That's right. That's right. We planned it that way. It happens not by accident, but by design. And, yep, unfortunately, he was right about one thing, and that was it. No question. Now, one of the things, Mike, our producer's listening, one of the things that's interesting, of course, is looking at the great works that you have done is that you, Mr. Mullins, have been accused of the greatest crime of all time, the most horrific crime of all time by the Anti-Defamation League, namely anti-Semitism. And thank you, young lady. And I just can't believe that a man like you, a Semite yourself, and a Caucasian Israelite, you would be guilty of this greatest crime of all time, according to the ADL. Used to shame on you.
Well, actually, I had a Jewish fiance at art school in Washington.
Ooh.
And she even took me to New York to meet her very wealthy parents, and they approved of me.
Oh, my. Well, apparently they weren't ADL people then.
They were behind the ADL. They were the money behind the ADL.
And they approved of you, huh?
Oh, yeah, they approved of me.
Well, they didn't know you too well, I guess, then afterwards. They probably.
I spent the weekend there at a luxurious apartment at Columbia University.
Yep.
It was furnished with Louis, authentic Louis XVI furniture from Paris.
Mm-hmm. Now, where would they ever get the money to be? I mean, I understand the Holocaust. In fact, I just got another letter today from the Wiesenthal Center and all of the other groups begging for money because of the plight of world Jewry and how anti-Semitism is literally taking over the planet from Mars. How would they manage to get the kind of money to wine and dine you and take you to these luxurious places now? Come on now.
Well, they print it.
They
That's not the federal.
You always have an answer for everything, Eustace.
Well,
you
I've
missed
been doing
your
this
call.
For a long time.
Excuse me?
I've been doing this for a long time. And I've been asked a lot of questions. And
you
I've
sure
always
have
been able to answer them.
You answer them honestly, forthrightly, and truthfully. And that's more than we can say for any of the so-called candidates for office, except maybe Ron Paul.
Well, Ron Paul didn't last very long.
Well, he's still in there, but you're right. He's been shunted aside because he's the only candidate who's doing what's forbidden, and that's talking real issues. And we know that we can't have that. That's an antiseptic to the political corruption, right?
Well, Paul would not say the truth about the Federal Reserve System, that it is a private bank which replaced the institutions of the United States.
Ooh, all right. Well, we'll get into that when we come back. Callers are lining up, and we'll invite your calls to speak with the great man of all times, the 20th century legend, Eustace Mullins, Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Be right back.
We've just been too busy setting up our businesses. We didn't pay enough attention to what was going on around us. We allowed a bunch of thieves and murderers to get control.
All righty, thank you. All right, I just heard George Bush say, I object and I resemble that remark. I resent that remark. All right. Well, it fits. And here we are with Eustace Mullins, ladies and gentlemen, on the air with Rick Adams after a long, long time. And I guess it's been over a year or something, hasn't it?
Well, huh? When I got up in the bathroom and that, it sounded like a castanets going on, but Spanish dances.
Ah. My goodness. Well, if you want to speak to Eustace, we only have the hour right now, so let me get the number out to you. It's 1-800-313-9443.
Oh, he's only got a minute.
Well, we have 1 hour a night right now. We have so many programs here now on the network that we're, you know, putting up the second audio channel here and, you know, expand the whole network. We already have actually expanded the outreach by satellite and the number of stations that carry us. So we're happy that has taken place and very pleased to announce it. Let me take a call right now. All right, Eustace, let's start off with Wes in Idaho. Hello there, Wes.
Hello, Rick and Eustace.
Yes.
Hello.
Thank you, Rick, for bringing on America's greatest historian, Eustace.
Yes.
Sure did change my life reading his books many years ago. I want to know from Eustace, he would perhaps know, was the Shah of Iran a Jew or just a Zionist? And Khomeini, was it a military takeover or was it a bloody revolution?
That was done deliberately by Mossad. Mossad sent a team to Iran to supposedly help the Shah. And they turned the whole people against him and had a revolution on his hand before he knew it.
But was the Khomeini takeover a bloody takeover or just a...
It was not a bloody takeover. The blood came later.
Okay. Not that small thing. I disagree with you on uses is that the Jews or Israel or the God's chosen people are direct. You to Pastor Pete Peters and scriptures4america.org. It mm-hmm. is at the root of all the problems.
Oh, yes. I call them the Canaanites. It's the curse of Canaan.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll let you get to another call.
Well, you don't disagree, actually, on that. Then Eustace agrees. And that's
okay.
Very interesting.
Well, watching a YouTube interview pretty recent of Eustace, I got the impression maybe he was just being facetious, that saying that the Jews are God's chosen people. The Bible says it, but it does not say anywhere. It says Israel is God's chosen people,
right.
But
America has become Israel.
Yes.
Right.
Amen.
See, you know that, Eustace. You're right on. Okay.
Well, that was Samuel Adams said that. He made that statement in the Revolutionary War.
Yes.
He said, we are here to create, that is here in America, to create the new Israel.
That's the new Israel.
And it's still our mission.
By divine providence, yes.
Absolutely.
I recall those words, yes, indeed. And thank you for the call, Wes.
Okay.
1-800-313-9443. That book you just mentioned about the Canaanites, as you described that, that book certainly caused quite a stir, didn't it, huh?
Oh, it really did.
I mean, that book in itself is, I think it's been out of print for a long time, but you said that you were going back to try to reissue, to get these, many of these books that you had written, so many of them, back into print.
Oh, I printed 2,000 copies of Curse of Canaan.
Oh.
San Francisco.
Wow.
And they sold like hotcakes. They're all gone.
Yeah, they've been selling on the Internet quite well, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. All my books are selling on the Internet because people want to get them.
I hope you're getting some residuals or money from some of this here.
Well, the ones that I sell myself.
Yeah, I know.
To the mail, I'm getting that money.
What about the copyrights on them? At the time, did you...
Copyrights are still effective in my name.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's you know, that's something that, of course, as you know, that particular tribe, engages in with regularity. In fact, we had a woman on the program not too long ago, not too many months ago, and she had a book that she had written, and it was on Saddam Hussein. In fact, it was an e-book, Saddam Hussein. And lo and behold, she found out that the book had lapsed, and they took away all of the rights so that she could no longer claim it was her book. And then they altered it and tried to bury the book. I mean, to take the copyrights and then just put the book out of circulation. That would be very interesting to know why. And I could speculate as to why, because they didn't want the people to know the truth about what went on in Iraq before, during, and after these wars.
Well, that's the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to cover up everything that the neoconservatives and the Israelis plotted to start the Iraq War, which was part of the old Ottoman Empire after World War One, and Iraq was created out of nothing by Woodrow Wilson.
Once again, meddling in the name of Americanism and democracy, huh?
Absolutely.
And just the opposite of the Founding Fathers' foreign policy. Here we are again in another war, and John McCain promises even more wars. So, isn't that wonderful? We can be thankful for such visionary men. We'll be right back with none other than Eustace Mullins, my guest. Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, will continue with your call.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Have you been at the front?
Front? What front?
Why, the war, of course.
What war?
Good heavens. You mean you don't know we've been at war with Germany since 1914?
Yes, and the war continues right up to the present, ladies and gentlemen. And here we are with Eustace Mullins, my guest. I'm Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger. And, hey, you might have heard that one of RBN's sponsors' commercials, Cartavite, is one of the best products that you can possibly lay your hands on. Well, that's true. This product is no joke. If you're having health problems, you're getting tired, worn down, and you need that lift without spending a lot of money, then you need Cartavite. Cartavite supports cardiovascular, blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and delivers nutrients to your cells. Plus, it's all natural, visit the sponsor today, www.heartdrop.com, or call 877-928-8822. That's 877-928-8822. And we're back now with Eustace Mullins. And, yes, we see that Mrs. Clinton has clinched. She's somehow miraculously won big time in Kentucky, while Obama is already planning his general election team. And besides that, Mr. Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, is seeing his last term in office, I believe, due to the announcement of his brain tumor malignancy. And Eustace Mullins, you've been a fan of Ted Kennedy, I know, for many years, haven't you?
Oh, I've written so many articles about him. I forgot. Six books about Unhappy Ted, about Chappaquiddick, and, you know, he's the only United States senator who ever drowned his pregnant girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. That we know of.
That we know of.
And may have been a few others, and he may have done a few others as well, but we don't know. But this is basically the curse of the Kennedy clan, so to speak. And, you know, I suspected this was the case when I heard that he was having these seizures, that it was a little bit more than stroke or, you know, TIAs, and I had the feeling that it was tumors. Now, of course, it's malignancy, and I certainly am not, you know, happy to see anybody have to suffer with that, but I think it's fairly obvious that he's planning his exit, and we will see another Kennedy probably take over his seat maybe in Massachusetts. So just that aside, let's go back to the telephone now. Speaking of Massachusetts, we have Dave in Massachusetts on the line. Hello, Dave.
Oh, hi, Rick. Hey, thanks for bringing us such a special guest tonight, Rick.
You're most welcome.
It's really a privilege to be able to ask.
And you're speaking to him right now. Go ahead. Say something to Eustace.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Mullins. Yeah, it's a privilege to be able to ask you a question. I have a question and then a follow-up question, if I have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mullins, would it be possible for you to clarify, possibly once and for all, you know, the accuracy of the term the Jewish international bankers? And you know, sometimes people, if you use that term, they'll cut you up short, and they'll even say something which I think is ridiculous, but they'll say, oh, well, look at the Rockefellers. They're international bankers, and they're not Jewish. And, of course, it's my understanding that they are Jewish.
Well, they are. Their name is Rockefeller, and you'll find that in Stephen Barnham's book, Our Crowd. And in there, he quotes a New York historian that... they got the origin of the family, and it's always in Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
And they are Jewish.
Oh, yeah, they are definitely Jewish, according to this Jewish historian of New York City.
Well, maybe that's another coincidence.
No. Now, how about, then they'll come out and say, well, they're not all Jewish, and certainly maybe they're not, but now I know there's Joe Kennedy and Averill Harriman, and of course this Brown Brothers Harriman bank, but now who would you say would be like the most famous Gentile international bankers?
Oh, I guess Albert Einstein.
Good one. Well, that answers that, but now, can I ask you my follow-up question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to see, I'm curious what kind of reaction this one gets, but, you know, I grew up with a kid, and when we were little kids, I knew him as Johnny Loftus, but now he's known as John Loftus, and he's written several books,
yep.
And a special prosecutor for the Justice Department for you know, special investigations and hunting down these Nazi war criminals. But what's your first reaction to that name, John Loftus?
Well, you can tell by a name by sound, you know.
The names don't mean anything. That's the whole point, you know.
Yeah.
They've been changed along the way as well.
By order of the German Emperor back in 1890, because they couldn't keep track of them. The names changed constantly.
Well, now, John Loftus, he was an Irish kid. Actually, interestingly enough, from Hyde Park, mm-hmm. the Hyde Park section of Boston.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote the Belarus Secret and the Unholy Trinity. And if you visit his website, he comes across like Jonathan Pollard should be canonized.
Mm-hmm.
That Jonathan Pollard is completely innocent,
that
it's actually some of the evil American intelligence establishment that has railroaded innocent Jonathan Pollard. That's the John Loftus I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's
and
another.
I know, for a fact, he's from an Irish Catholic background. We all used to go to Catholic Mass together when we were kids. His mother and my mother and all us kids, and we'd all go to Mass together. And I grew up with him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, see, religion has nothing to do with race, and I think that's something people have to remember. You can be of the Jewish religion and not be a Jew. You can be of the Catholic religion and be a Jew. You understand the difference?
I understand, Rick, but
you
like
do.
I grew up with this kid, and I'm virtually positive he's of a typical, like, Boston Irish Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
His father
I don't know myself, and I really wouldn't make it an issue, except if it were to come up, but I think that's the thing that people need to be aware of and keep focused on, Dave, you know, is the disingenuousness. See, we like to refer to them by their real name, the Kenites, the children of Cain, and how they have always been at the right place at the right time, because God put them there as a judgment rod for true Israel, for his true Israelite Caucasian Israel people of Europe and America today. And that is why they're there, and that's why they're given control over banking, I believe, and over media, and certainly over the economy, over academe, largely, because of that role they have as a chastisement rod for the true Israelites. And we're certainly being chastised today. We're just about at the end of the road.
Yeah, I have Mr. Mullen's book, and I've read it, The Curse of Cain, and I have most of his books, and I'm just kind of surprised that name didn't ring a bell with him. I guess this John Loftus is kind of a big shot down there in Washington, and I
mm-hmm.
thought he wrote he wrote that book, The Belarus Secret.
Right,
and
right.
He wrote Unholy Trinity.
All right, did you have any other question before we move on, Dave?
I'll just say this one last thing, then hang up, Rick.
It
kind of ties in with a previous call. I was on the internet the other day, and I was looking at Ayatollah Khomeini's favorite sayings, the sayings of Ayatollah Khomeini, and I found it interesting that Ayatollah Khomeini kept referring to these people, these Zionists and everything, instead of warmongers, he always uses the term worldmongers, that they're
mm-hmm.
worldmongers.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mullins, have any thought on
Eustace,
worldmongers?
Do you have any response to that term?
Oh, yes. Well, the main spokesman for Rupert Murdoch, the news star of the United States, is Bill O'Reilly, who also identifies himself as a Catholic choir boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he never fails to refer to his activity in the Catholic Church. But Bill O'Reilly is the example of an ideal front man
mm-hmm.
because people think he's a great American patriot.
You mean the media choir boy?
Oh, yeah. Murdoch pays him $10 million a year
mm-hmm.
to put out his Zionist propaganda.
Gee, what do you think I could get if I wanted to sell my soul, Eustace?
Well, you can get a good price. I never have tried to sell mine.
Me neither. I guess it isn't really worth the money in the long run, is it? Huh?
Oh, it's not. You can't give up your soul.
Nah, Jesus said that himself repeatedly. All right, Dave, thanks for your call anyway. Appreciate it very much. And he was referring to Ayatollah Khomeini again. A lot of interest in Iran these days, as you know. What is your guess? Are you thinking that Dick Cheney and gang and the Israel lobby in America is going to pull off another war?
Oh, indeed. Hillary Clinton
mm-hmm.
says that the first thing she does when she's elected president, she's going to declare war on Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And she's even talked about obliterating Iran.
Yes.
So that's a real warmonger talk.
Well, all of the candidates that went, before the museum there, the Holocaust Museum in Israel, of course, they've all been made to visit that first and foremost. They have all basically sworn their allegiance to the state of Israel and not to the United States. And I find that to be rather interesting, except, you know, a couple like Ron Paul and Mike Gravel, and there's been one or two here that haven't done that, but all of the so-called major players have all bowed the knee, haven't they?
Oh, they certainly have. And the interesting coincidence is that they established printing our money for the Federal Reserve System, ostensibly as American currency. Well, that money is printed next door to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
Well, that is a coincidence.
I think it was deliberate.
Oh, are you kidding me? All right. Let me take another call. 1-800-313-9443. We're speaking with Eustace Mullins. We have Dave in Texas now. Hello, Dave.
How are you all doing this evening?
Good.
I want to thank you for putting on tonight's program, being able to arrange to Mr. Mullins as your guest tonight.
Sure.
If I might, I'll make a couple of very quick points.
Mm-hmm.
I've called in before on some of the other programs on the network. I'm an avid supporter and listener of the network, I must say. Member of the consider myself a Christian member of the Patriot Movement.
Mm-hmm.
I believe our government has gotten away from us, and I haven't done the research anywhere near the degree of Mr. Mullins has, and I want to thank him for the work he's done over many years' time, because I've not had the occasion to go into it as deep as he has. But on what cursory examinations I have been doing on my own, to me it seems to all, in terms of the immediate impact on what I see as the breakpoint of getting away from constitutional government, seems to have most occurred beginning with the Woodrow Wilson administration, apparently backed up by his top aide, Colonel Mendel House.
Yes.
And they took away our rights in a number of areas by imposing, I believe, Mr. Mullins may agree with this, the unratified 16th Amendment, which is the income tax amendment. And I've also come to believe the next 17th Amendment, I believe now also come to believe unratified, taking the state's rights away to nominate their own senators through state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, most people don't realize giving us less rights, less representation through our states under the current system if we hadn't made that change. So we're actually worse off.
Precisely.
Plus, of course, the Federal Reserve. And I believe that there are several points on the problem of the Federal Reserve. It violates the Constitution. It wasn't an amendment to the Constitution. It was never ratified. And even as a bill, as a so-called act, it was apparently passed on a voice-only vote, not a recorded vote. And if I'm not mistaken, by Constitution, final passage of all votes are supposed to be recorded votes. We've had a number of key votes. That one included the Federal Reserve Act 1913, and a lot of more recent votes in the current Congress, violating our Constitution and our rights. They're passed by voice-only votes. That makes them non-laws because they haven't even been voted up or down by recorded vote, and yet the President signs them into law. They should all be challenged in the courts as their constitutionality. One is not being passed, and in the case of the Federal Reserve, it's not constitutional because it wasn't an amendment, and it should have had to have been, and it would be bad policy. I propose undoing the Federal Reserve Act and having Federal Reserve do away with that, have Treasury, the Department of Treasury, issue the money and have the money backed by true hard assets, including gold and silver, and re-legalize gold and silver coinage and do away with fiat money and do away with the Federal Reserve, as well as the income tax, as well as reinstate states' legislatures picking senators and several other proposed amendments to get back control of our government, balanced budget amendment, term limits for members of Congress, because we've lost control of our country and we need to get it back.
Dave, you sound like you're running for president. You sound terrific.
Well, I'm not in a position to do that just yet, but I
know. No, but you've given the speech. Now, Eustace, you heard what he said. Can you find any fault in anything Dave said just now?
Not a word. I want to add that the Constitution specified gold and silver backing for the money of the United States and the original Constitution, Article 1, Section 10.
Right.
And my mentor, Ezra Pound, taught me that the Federal Reserve Act usurped the Constitution because it replaced the Constitution. It actually took over the United States Treasury, which was part of the Constitution.
I agree with that. It needs to be overturned. Would there be a possibility of challenging these issues in the courts until such time as we might pass amendments to overturn these things?
Oh, people have talked about that for many years, but they know that to challenge the Federal Reserve Act and replace the Constitution would take millions of dollars. You couldn't even open the case without $10 million to back it up.
Yeah, the courts are unfortunately are just, well, they're sellouts.
They've
you know,
sacked
for the,
them, yeah.
For the most part, they've sold out, and they have acted just as unconstitutionally in these areas as has the executive branch and the Congress. And they say, hey, we just can't do it because it's not practical to tell the truth. I mean, you know, and to be honest about politics. So.
And we're going to have to change all of it eventually.
Oh, I mean, it's going to take much more than a... see, I don't believe it can be done anyway. Put it this way. Aside from divine intervention, I don't believe that anything at this point can be changed within the system. I do believe the words of our founding fathers that we do need to see a coup d'etat, a revolution, if you will, at some point, because now the system is totally and completely the opposite of what it was intended to be. And I don't know how you feel about that, Eustace, but I don't see any redemption in anyone, the political system, that can change it at this point.
No, not now, because any the amendments themselves changed the Constitution for the worse, and each time that they amended it, and the Federal Reserve is actually an amendment itself, because it takes away from the Congress the right to coin money and to supervise waste and measures.
Mm-hmm.
So that was taken right out of the Constitution by the Federal Reserve Act.
And we've tolerated it all these years.
We've tolerated it. It's never been, if someone would speak up and say, let's restore the Constitution.
I'll speak up. I propose we do it through the state legislatures, and eventually we have to have probably a constitutional convention for amendments, not to rewrite the Constitution, but just the amendments.
Well, you know what they say, Dave. Saying it is one thing. Getting it done is another.
True.
Hey, listen, I got to run. Thanks for your call, Dave. Appreciate it. We'll be back with another call or two when we come return with more Uncensored Radio Free America here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Rick Adams. Eustace Mullins, my guest.
The buzzards have control. We might as well face it. They intend to keep it.
And yes, indeed, but we intend to gut it. Here we are with Eustace Mullins, my old friend, and you're listening to Uncensored Radio Free America. Let me see if I can take a call from Leo, Massachusetts here. Hello there, Leo. Hello, Leo. You're on the air with Eustace.
Hi. It's great to speak to someone like you. I think my friend Evan gave me one of your books about how to fix the IRS a long time back with you with a picture of a giant wrench in your hand.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, you were talking about the Rockefeller. Where can that be found for verification? What's the source?
It's a very well-known book called Our Crowds, which was a bestseller for years.
And Our Crowd?
Our Crowds.
O-U-R-C-R-O-W-D.
Yeah. It's
written by
Stephen L. Birmingham.
L. Birmingham?
Yeah. And you find the copies in libraries all over the country. And it's documented word for word, just as I've told it to you. And you can photostat it or make any copies you want to.
I also understand that the... Rothschild family is actually the Bauer. Bauer.
Oh yeah, Bauer means peasant. They didn't want to be known as moneylenders, so they called themselves peasants.
Oh my! Will wonders ever cease?
The thing is, this that what's amazing to me is how few people understand the financing of the wars by on both sides. Like I was at a rally and I was standing close to these people who were Palestinian supporters, and somebody came over thinking I was a Holocaust denier, and this Zionist said to me, are you a Holocaust denier? And I said, no, I don't deny the dead people, but I'm interested in who funded Hitler. I said, well, Max Warburg funded Hitler and Paul Warburg funded the Allies. His face screwed up and he walked away. He could not talk anymore.
Well, the real war criminals were never indicted after World War II because
They became presidents.
Max Warburg and Max Oppenheimer, and both of those bankers are the two biggest banking firms in Germany today. And this is occupied Germany because the American army is still occupying
it. That's right. Yep.
These two bankers who financed Hitler are still running the whole country.
Some of those war criminals even became president of the United States, huh?
Oh, yes. That qualification.
Yes.
Well,
that's a subject.
The latest one on Bush talking about appeasement of Nazis, even on The View, there was this article, Joy Behar brought up the whole Prescott connection and really slammed W. It's out on the net about Joy Behar from the...
I don't know. Do you have any comment on that theory there, Eustace?
Well, the Harrimans are only agents of the Rothschilds.
But I mean the Bush connection to funding of the Hitler regime?
Oh, yes. There's many books said about that.
Now, what do you make of it all?
Trading with the Enemy.
Right.
Which is a very good book. But
Who wrote that?
That connection has been well known since World War One.
Who wrote Trading with the Enemy?
Charles Higgins.
Higgins,
H-I-G-G-I-N-S? H-I-G-H-A-M.
Higgum.
Oh, Higgum.
Yeah, Higgum. Right. All right, we're just about out of time, though, Leo. So,
well, thank you.
Hey, I want to thank you for bringing up these interesting questions. And thank you for being with me, Eustace, again. And please, let's do it again real soon, okay?
Oh, certainly. I'm going to be a political refugee in Dallas for some time. So
well, thank God. You'll be a refugee right here on this network. How's that?
This is fine.
Thank you, Eustace, and may the Lord be with you and also with us. So good night, and we'll speak again very shortly.
Very good.
Good night, Eustace.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night I think we have Larry Nichols ready to talk about what's going on with these last few primaries and the pledged delegates, the superdelegates, and more baloney. All right. Well, we'll see you then tomorrow night with more of the program here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay with us and keep your dial set here. Rick Adams, good night.